Thank you. Be seated. Court also welcomes today students from Duncanville High School senior government class. And we are now proceeded to the final oral submission for today, the cause of Tommy Thompson versus the Travelers Indemnity Company of Rhode Island. In this cause, the petitioner will be allowed 20 minutes to present oral argument, the respondent 20 minutes, and 10 minutes for rebuttal. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner.
May it please the court, Mr. Edward Berliner will present argument for petitioner.
May it please the court, my name is Edward Berliner. I represent Mr. Tommy Thompson, a jockey at Laner Downs involved in a collision resulting in a lawsuit that brings us here today. This case, as you know, is a workers' compensation claim, and the only point in issue today is whether or not Tommy Thompson was, in fact, an employee of Maynard Downs Racetrack at the time of his injury. The case was tried to the court without a jury and appealed to the Court of Appeals, both of whom ruled that Mr. Thompson was not an employee. It is, of course, our contention that the facts establish conclusively as a matter of law that Tommy Thompson was in fact an employee of Maynard Downs at the time of his injury. The facts are not in dispute, nor is the law in this case in dispute. In fact, the respondent says in his brief, and we embrace the statement of the law, and I'd like to read it to the court. The respondent says, and we concur, that the test which must be applied in determining whether a worker is an employee or independent contractor is primarily one of control. Does the employer have the right to control the progress, details, and methods of operations by which the work is accomplished? The right of control requires more than supervision. It requires pervasive or ultimate control and the power to control and direct not merely the end sought to be accomplished, but the means and details of the accomplishment. Further, control means the power to direct the physical conduct of the work and performing the work is shown by control over when the job is performed, the regularity of hours, the amount of time spent on the particular aspects of the work, the selection of the tools and the appliances used to perform the work, and the physical method or manner of accomplishing the results. A brief review of the undisputed facts in this case are as follows. Maynard Downs was a private business, not licensed by any state agency at the time that this accident occurred. There was no parimutuel betting and there was no state racing commission. Maynard Downs operated as a private business, chose the way they ran their operation by themselves, enforced their own rules, and made money in the pursuit of racing. They solicited pools of jockeys to ride horses at the racetrack by sending out notices as to when races would be held, informing the jockeys of the types of races, the distances, and the purses that would be given. 1 hour prior to the beginning of race day, 1 hour prior to race time, any jockey desiring to ride in any races that day were required by Maynard Downs to be present in the jockey room. Any person who was not present in the jockey room of Maynard Downs 1 hour prior to race day could not ride a race. If, for example, a jockey was intending to ride in the 10th race of the day that wouldn't be ridden for 4 hours after race time started, he was required by Maynard Downs to appear in the jockey room 1 hour before the first race of the day. He was sequestered in the room, which was kept private and separate from every other part of the racetrack, and he was watched over continuously from when he entered the room until he left his work that day by an employee of Maynard Downs, either a paddock judge, a clerk of the scales, a racing steward, or some other type of judge continuously monitored the conduct, the activities of the jockey from 1 hour prior to race time until he left work that day. Now, those judges, those clerks, those stewards were all employees of Maynard Downs. And all of those people that I've just enumerated have the absolute right to fire the jockeys in question.
How can you fire somebody that was not their employee?
That's a very good question, Your Honor. And our position is that that's one of the tests as to whether or not an individual is an employee. Maynard Downs certainly had the right to fire Tommy Thompson.
Thompson didn't have to show up for work.
Well, Your Honor, that's an argument that the Court of Appeals makes, but unfortunately that's applying assumption of the risk to this case, and in fact, assumption of the risk is not a defense. nobody really technically has to show up for work unless you want to earn your pay, unless you want to feed your children. You're not required to go to your job, but you lose your job if you don't show up. Well, their right to fire was tantamount to any right that any owner, any trainer, or any other entity had at the racetrack. Maynard Downs had the right to fire that jockey if he misperformed during the course of a race. If they didn't like the way he rode, if he rode not in accordance with their own rules, they had the right to not pay him, to suspend his license, to throw him out of the park, and to never let him back in again.
This jockey could have gone to work if he wanted to. He could have ridden two or three races if he wanted to, or none.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
Why doesn't that make him an independent contractor?
All of the cases that are cited in each of the briefs say that he's not an independent contractor, that the right of control determines whether or not he's an independent contractor.
The state of Kentucky and other states who have looked at this issue say that he's an independent contractor.
No, they don't, in fact. The cases that are cited by respondent in his pre-submission brief, if our facts are applied to those cases, in each of those cases virtually, there may be one that would hold differently, but in each of those cases, Tommy Thompson, A, would be found to be an employee of some entity. Not one of the cases hold that he is an independent contractor. And secondly, if you apply our facts to the cases cited by respondent, in virtually every case, he would be considered an employee of the racetrack because one of the reasons is the right to hire and fire. In the cases cited...
You have the right to hire and fire an independent contractor, too, don't you?
I'm sure that you do. Certainly you do. And an independent contractor may have the right to show up or not to show up. But once...
So how does that become a salient test to decide the difference between these two categories?
Pardon me, how does the right of control become a salient test?
The right of hire and fire.
I'm not contending that is the only reason that he becomes an employee. I'm saying that the entire right to control his every movement from when he does show up at work and walks in the door till he leaves at the end of the day and is given his paycheck by his employer, Maynard Downs, that the whole total of the actions taken by Maynard Downs exhibits the right of control that is the test required to be applied by this court.
How about race strategy? You know, doesn't the owner of the horse have something to say to the jockey?
He certainly does.
How he ought to run his race?
Yes, sir, he does.
Does that remove control then to the owner of the horse from the...
Not in the least. For example, if the owner of the horse said, look, I want you to cut off the horse in the second lane, and I want you to hit him with your whip so that he won't run. Well, the jockey may listen to that and may take that instruction, and if he does it, he may, in fact, earn the admiration of the trainer, but he'll be suspended and fired by Maynard Downs for violating the rules that they have chosen to apply in this case. Yes, sir?
Under your analogy, wouldn't that make every Major League Baseball player the employee of the stadium in which the game is conducted?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. They would make them the employee of the team for whom they're employed.
Wouldn't that make, in this case, the jockey the employee of the owner of the horse he rode?
No, sir, not at all. The owner of the horse, first of all, has the right to make suggestions as to how he runs his race, as to how he guides the horse. But Maynard Downs, the ultimate employer, has the right to set down the basic ground rules of racing by which he must ride his race by. Not a suggestion, but an edict. And failing, for example, if the jockey failed to do what the owner asked of him, the owner had no authority to withhold pay or to revoke pay or to fire him. He did have the authority not to let him ride another horse later in the day, but Maynard Downs was the only entity here that had the authority to fire that jockey for not riding in accordance with the rules set forth by the employer, Maynard Downs. Maynard Downs ultimately controlled whether or not the jockey got paid based on whether or not the jockey's performance conformed to Maynard Downs' rules. Maynard Downs set the basic rules, and albeit they chose the American Quarter Horse Association set of rules to invoke, but they used those as their own rules. Maynard Downs gave those rules of racing to each jockey before each race, and Maynard Downs enforced those rules by a series of judges and stewards who were all employees of Maynard Downs, all of whom had the authority to revoke the jockey's ability to ride at that racetrack and to take his number down from the race, not pay him, in effect fire him from the race in which he ran at originally. So
at some point, is the right of control a factual question?
I think it is a factual question. I think that this court...
But you say it's established as a matter of law here.
I think that the facts conclusively establish, as a matter of law, that Tommy Thompson is an employee of Maynard Downs.
In other words, if there had been a jury in this case and they'd heard all the evidence and ruled against you, then we'd just have to reverse the judgment as a matter of law. There's no other conclusion that could be reached in this case.
That's
not
correct.
Even a scintilla of evidence on another side.
That's correct. It's my belief and my opinion that the evidence in this case is a block of granite. He walks into the door at the front of the block of granite and he leaves at the other end. And those facts, all taken as a whole, require this court to rule as petitioner is urged. In other words, to rule that he is an employee.
If he didn't show up, have to show up an hour in advance, would it then be a fact question that the fact finder would have to determine?
If the only fact that was different was the requirement that he show up 1 hour in advance of race time, the answer, I think, is this court would still be required to rule as we request. He was required to be sequestered. Each and every movement that he made was watched and scrutinized by Maynard Downs, by their clerk of the scales, by their racing judges, by their stewards, by the starting gate judge. And if you merely remove the time that he had to show up at work and allowed him to show up at any time that he wanted, he still would be sequestered. Each of his movements would still be controlled. His riding would be governed by Maynard Downs' set of rules. He would be required to be licensed by Maynard Downs. He could be suspended by Maynard Downs. He would ultimately be paid by Maynard Downs. If he violated any of their rules of racing, he could be suspended or, in fact, fired by Maynard Downs. And Maynard Downs was the only entity that had that authority. Respondent in his
brief... giving Maynard Downs that authority, specify the word fired?
Suspended, numbers taken down, not paid for the ride in question. Those are the words that were used at the time of trial that were testified to. The word fired is I suppose, my term or a term of art that, when taken all together, that's in effect what would happen to him.
If those things happen to you, you are fired.
Pardon me?
What you're saying is if those things happen to you, you are in effect fired.
Well, in fact, if Maynard Downs said, give me your license back, son, you can no longer race here because you violated our rules, Maynard Downs has in effect fired you. And one step back, part of respondent's argument is that the control that's exhibited by these owners or trainers occurs during the period of the race, when the gate opens till when you cross the wire. That's when they suggest how you should ride their horses. But Maynard Downs has a safeguard that protects the jockey from being fired for his race course performance by the trainers or owners.
What is the policy of Maynard Downs in regard to people that are fired or suspended or whatever? If you're suspended today or suspended in the first race, can you come back and ride in the fourth race or the
fifth? I believe the only evidence is that Maynard Downs has the authority to determine the severity of the suspension or the fine. Maynard Downs has the authority to fine these people up to $2,500 for misconduct. They have the authority to take their numbers down. They have the authority to suspend.
What do you mean take their numbers down? What does that mean?
Well, if Tommy Thompson rode the winning horse in race number 8, after which he was injured, and he had violated Maynard Downs' rules of racing, Maynard Downs, through their stewards, through their race judges, had the authority to take number 1, the horse that Tommy Thompson was riding, from number 1, and put him to the end of the pack. Number 2 then becomes number 1. So they have the authority to take the purse away, they have the authority to take the victory away, or whatever place away from Tommy Thompson or from the jockey as a result of any misconduct as interpreted by their own employees, as interpreted by the rules that they've chosen to operate under.
Do they have the authority to suspend him from that races for that day or for that month or that season?
Yes, sir. They certainly do. They have the authority to revoke his license permanently. They have the authority to revoke his ability to race that day or indefinitely.
What policy were you about to indicate Maynard Downs had in effect that would limit or prevent the dismissal of one of these jockeys by the racehorse owner?
Well, I began to say that one of the cases cited by respondent says that the jockey is not an employee because the owner or trainer had the authority to, in effect, fire a jockey from that ride for violating his suggestions. And Maynard Downs has has a stopgap procedure that prohibits that, because the jockey, once he mounts up, gets paid for that ride unless Maynard Downs determines that he doesn't get paid.
Now, who writes the check?
Maynard Downs writes the check. The owners and trainers of the horses pay numerous fees, jock mount fees, entry fees, all kinds of fees to Maynard Downs. They write their checks or give Maynard Downs their money, which is deposited into a general operating account of Maynard Downs. Into the same account is deposited ticket sales, program sales, concession sales. At the end of the race day, the jockey goes to Maynard Downs, who tabulates his earnings, withholds $5 for some sort of insurance program, and hands the jockey a check. Now, if the owner or trainers had paid their jock mount fee, which is what it's called, with a check, for example, and that check bounced, Tommy Thompson would still receive his paycheck from Maynard Downs, because it's a Maynard Downs check or cash from Maynard Downs. Maynard Downs ultimately pays and assures that he will be paid. If they are fortunate enough to win a race, the trainer or owner may give them a 10% or 15% interest in the purse, which amounts basically to a tip. But Maynard Downs controls each and every activity undertaken by the jockey, from and including requiring his attendance at least 1 hour prior to race day if he intends to work.
Does Maynard Downs determine which jockey rides which horse?
Not necessarily, but they have the ability to do that.
Do they, from a practical point of view, or do the owners determine?
From a practical point of view, Maynard Downs makes the initial determination, because an owner can choose a jockey that's A, not licensed by Maynard Downs, or B, not able to obtain a license by Maynard Downs, and Maynard Downs will refuse to even allow that person in the jockey ring. If the jockey chosen by an owner or trainer weighs too much, Maynard Downs removes him from the ride.
In this particular case, who determined whether Tommy Thompson rode the horse?
In our case, a trainer made an arrangement sometime during the course of the race day for Tommy to ride the horse in question.
I'm having trouble with the analogy between other professional sports. If you take ice hockey, the referee has the authority to control the activities of the players while they're on the ice. He can fine them, he can suspend them, he can kick them off the ice, he can do all the things you've told us about so far. Yet they're not the employees.
Well, one of the things that the referee can't do, the same as the analogy that respondent makes about an attorney arguing before the court, is that he ultimately doesn't control the pay. He doesn't write the check. He doesn't tell the man when to show up on the court. There are subtle differences, and one of the major differences that's pointed out in the cases is the writing of the check. But the major difference here is that Maynard Downs is the entity that chose the rules that this game had to be played by. They set the rules for the jockeys. They established the rules in accordance with the American Quarter Horse Association, but that was purely voluntary at that time on their part. There was no state requirement, there was no requirement whatsoever that they enforce these rules, but they chose to do business in that manner.
Let me ask you about that. You made that distinction earlier in your recitation of the facts. Does it make a difference now that the state is involved, or
it may well make a difference.
So any decision that we make in this case may not have any effect in, with reference to jockeys that are riding in races where you have thrown equal weight?
Depending on what the rules of the State Racing Commission in fact are right now, it may not have an effect, but it would have this effect. Workers' compensation law is required to be interpreted in light most fair to the injured worker. Each of the cases cited by respondent in his pre-submission brief makes a very, very interesting statement, and that is, A, no jockey was an independent contractor, and B, each jockey was required by the courts, or at least desired by the courts, to be covered by a policy of workers' compensation. The courts in each case were not faced with a situation where, on the one hand, a jockey would be an employee of somebody, or on the other hand, would not be. In each instance, the jockey was deemed to be an employee of somebody, so that he would be covered. Pardon me?
Who is it, somebody else?
Well, in some instances it was a trainer, in some instances it was owners. In one of the cases cited, the track itself said that the jockey is our employee in order to attempt to avoid some responsibility for some negligence that they had committed. But he was not an independent contractor. And in each and every case, the court bent over backwards. The Arizona case, for example, which is cited first, makes a specific requirement that the jockeys be covered by a policy of insurance, some workers' compensation insurance policy, while they're deciding this procedural matter as to who, in fact, will be required to hold the policy.
Tell me about the $5 fee.
At the start of the race season, which had nothing to do with the date in question, a group of jockeys that showed up to be a jockey pool was asked if they wanted $5 withheld from their pay at the end of the day to purchase insurance. That pool voted that they did, and subsequent to that time, each jockey was required to, or Maynard Downs, in fact, withheld $5 from their pay for an insurance policy.
Do they pay them by check?
There was a little conflict. My client said that he was always paid by Maynard Downs in cash, but Maynard Downs' testimony was that they always paid by check and they always withheld his $5.
Are any of the checks in the record to show on the stub?
Well, again, Your Honor, my client contended that there's no dispute that they withheld the $5. There's no question, and respondent will state the same thing. They did, in fact, withhold the $5.
What did the $5 go for? What kind of a policy did
it paid for some, for a health policy that paid up to about $5,000 for injuries occurring on the premises.
Is a health and accident policy, not a worker's compensation?
That's correct. Now, that fact wasn't made clearly known to, the type of policy wasn't made clearly known to the individuals whose pay was being docked, but in fact it was docked. Mr. Thompson, in fact, didn't know what the policy was until sometime later.
Who purchased the policy?
I suppose that Maynard Downs did. All that the jockeys did was have their pay docked.
Any other questions? Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Russ Horton will present argument from the respondent.
May it please the court. The only issue before the court today is the employment status of the petitioner. As the party bearing the burden, petitioner takes the position, as he must, to obtain reversal. The evidence conclusively establishes as a matter of law that he was an employee of Maynard Downs at the time of his injury. That is a position that is not supported by the facts of this case, by Texas law as it currently stands, or the law of every other state in the country that has addressed this issue, and all have determined that jockeys are not employed by the tracks where they ride. In fact, the evidence was sufficient in this case, as found by the trial judge and the Court of Appeals, to establish that Mr. Thompson was not employed by Maynard Downs at the time of his injury.
Who was he employed by?
I believe on these facts, Your Honor, there was sufficient evidence to establish an employment relationship between Mr. Thompson and the owner or trainer that requested that he ride his horse, instruct him on the strategy to use during the race, and had complete control over the details of his work.
Which race did he run in where he got hurt?
He rode, I believe, in the eighth race. Had
he ridden in any races before that day?
I believe he indicated in the record, if I recall, that he had ridden in some races prior to this one.
Whose employee was he if he ran in the second race?
Well, say if he ran the second race, it would be the same owner or trainer, if it's the same one that had hired him. Whoever had hired him to ride his horse, instructed him on how the horse should be ridden, and given him those definitions or instructions on the riding of the horse. I don't think that the determination of whether he's an employee of the owner or trainer or an independent contractor of the owner or trainer is necessary to the determination of this issue in this court.
Are you saying this was properly a fact issue for the trial court for the trier of facts to decide in the trial court, or as a matter of law, are you saying that he was not an employee of Maynard Downs?
I believe, Your Honor, on these facts, as a matter of law, he is not an employee of Maynard Downs, and
so
I think
both sides agree that this is an issue that ought to be resolved as a matter of law and not left to.
Well, not exactly, Your Honor, because the issue before this court is Mr. Thompson must prove in order to obtain reversal is that the evidence conclusively establishes his employment status as a matter of law.
So you'll take it either way.
Well, I believe that it is the petitioner's burden to get over first the hurdle that there is at least or no scintilla of evidence to show that he was not an employee. And I think in order to obtain reversal on a no evidence point before this court, he must show that the evidence conclusively established his employment relationship. And the trial court and the Court of Appeals, who looked at this issue, determined that that was not the case in this instance.
Counsel, I want to go back and fully develop this other question. Let's say they ran eight races out there that day, and he rode in every race. Would it be your position that he was the employee of the owner
of each individual Hardesty Road, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh?
Yes, Your Honor. Employer or independent contractor, depending upon the facts of the case.
But in none of those instances would he be an employee of Maynard Downs?
That's correct, Your Honor. For instance, the Simmons case out of the Missouri Supreme Court. In the Simmons case, and that was a case that was a little different from this case, but I think it's appropriate to point it out at this point. Simmons was a situation where, ironically, it was the jockey who was trying to negate his employment relationship to the track, and the track was trying to establish an employment relationship in order to avoid tort liability. In the Simmons case, the track stood before the court and said, we have all these controls over the jockey, and the court still found against the track and even noted that even if you assume the jockey is employed by the track during the normal course of the day, it does not logically follow that during the race he is an employee of the track. And that is because during the race, the jockey is employed by the owner or trainer that shares the common goal of winning the race. To say that the track has pervasive or ultimate control over all the details of this work really ignores the purpose of the jockey, the reason the jockey is there to compete. The jockey is there, and as Mr. Thompson testified in his cross-examination, being a jockey is a job of skill. It requires more than simply being short of weight and slight in stature. It requires that the jockey use his skills, the whip, the rein, the shifting of his body weight. Use those factors to control the horse to obtain a goal, to win the race. Those are the specifics of the jockey's performance. Those specifics are not controlled in any way by Maynard Downs. The elements of control, the petitioner argues, that somehow Maynard Downs required that the jockeys not cheat. That's simply to say that Maynard Downs, through the stewards, did not allow the jockeys to reach over and whip the horse next to them or grab the reins on the horse next to them or block off or run off a horse next to them, causing the horse to trip and injure the jockey. That is the kind of element the petitioner argues creates an employment relationship.
Now, but that's not all. They require him to be there 1 hour before the race and stay there.
As the evidence in the record indicates, so that he can be weighed, and that so he is free from the public, so he cannot be bribed, so that weights cannot be removed, so that he cannot take drugs, so that he cannot use electronic devices or have something like that placed into his uniform so he can stun the horse and motivate the horse. That's correct, Your Honor. He is segregated from the public for one reason and one reason only, to make sure that the race is fair.
Well, how about the pay? Maynard Downs writes a check, pays it for his services.
Well, petitioner argues that that is pay by Maynard Downs, and I think that misstates the record. I think the record is clear that this is simply a pass-through. The money is collected from the owners or trainers, and it is then paid to the jockey. Maynard Downs does not get involved in whether the jockey should get paid because he didn't win the race or only placed third. The money is paid to the jockey. Maynard Downs does not get involved in addition to determining the bonus. That is something that the owner or trainer gets together with the jockey and decides, I'm going to pay you a little extra. If you can win this race, I'll share the purse with you. Maynard Downs does not get involved in that at all.
That's a separate check.
That is a separate agreement and a separate check, yes, Your Honor.
Who collects the $5 insurance premium?
The $5 insurance policy is paid for a group policy, I believe the record shows, that all the jockeys in the class decided to be bound by.
Who collects the $5 from the jockey?
It is taken from the $40 jock mount, paid by the owner or trainer, and is paid through Maynard Downs for the insurance.
Maynard Downs then takes the $5.
Maynard Downs passes the money on to the insurance company. Yes, Your Honor.
Who purchased the policy from the insurance company?
I don't believe there's anything in the record on that, Your Honor, and I don't know if that was ever an issue at the trial court, and frankly, I do not know. I don't know if it was the jockeys group. It was the jockeys as a group that decided to obtain this policy so they could get a group policy and group benefits. I do not know who purchased
it. Does the record reflect any other withholdings on the part of Maynard Downs from the Rocky Chase?
None whatsoever, Your Honor.
No income tax.
At the end of the year, Mr. Thompson was provided a 1099 non-employee compensation form, which is identical to the facts in the Monday decision out of the Kentucky Court of Appeals. In Monday, again, the jockey came before the court and said, look, they pay me once a week a gross sum, and they hold out some money. But the Monday court said that the payment of a fee, the pass-through of the fee from the owner and trainer, does not create an employment relationship. It is not the specifics of control that creates that relationship, and therefore, the Monday court found no employment relationship.
If a jockey wins a race and the owner pays him a bonus, 10% or 15% or whatever, How is that reported for federal tax purposes?
That would be whatever the jockey works out, Your Honor. The track is in no way involved in that, doesn't know if it's paid, does not get involved in those negotiations, so Maynard Downs would not have any way to know how much is paid.
But would that be an indicia of employment to you if the employer furnished the same kind of 1099 form? If the owner
or trainer, Your Honor? No. Payment is not an indicia. The test in Texas is the right to control the details of the work. The details of the work, the motivating of the horse, the steering of the horse, is controlled by the owner or trainer and the owner or trainer alone.
So under the hypothetical situation I raised earlier, if he had ridden for eight different owners on eight different horses and eight different races this day, he would have had eight different employers.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Including for the purpose of collecting a bonus.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct.
If he showed up and didn't ride at all, would Maynard Downs pay?
No, Your Honor. He's only paid by the owner or trainer once he has a mount, what's called a jock mount. That is paid by the owner or trainer for the mount. But note again, the record indicates clearly that Mr. Thompson did not have to show up at Maynard Downs on any given race day. He was free.
Does the record show that these jockeys tend to ride at one track most of the time, or does the record show that Mr. Thompson or others tended to ride at several different?
I believe it's to the contrary, Your Honor. I believe the record, as Mr. Thompson indicated in the record, he rode at many tracks around Texas, Ruidoso included, Louisiana Downs. I think he may have indicated he rode at least Louisiana Downs, but he indicated clearly that he rode at Brady and at Maynard, Goliad, several other racetracks around Texas. And on any given race day, it was Mr. Thompson's sole option to ride at Maynard Downs or ride at Ruidoso or ride at Brady or not ride at all. Maynard Downs did not suspend a jockey or prevent a jockey from riding simply because they failed to appear previously.
Did any of these other tracks had their own rules as to who they would license and who they would allow?
I believe the other tracks are quarter horse tracks, and all quarter horse tracks, be it Ruidoso or Brady or Maynard Downs, are all bound by the American Quarter Horse Association guidelines, the governing body for quarter horse racing in Texas and around the country. I believe that's what the evidence says, and so all the tracks would have the same rules.
But these tracks are now all going to be under the Racing Commission.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'd like to address that point because I think that this case is a case of first impression but will have great import if the court decides that all jockeys must be employees of the track. You'll note that many other states have looked at this issue. New York, New Jersey, Louisiana, Arizona, California, Missouri, Kentucky, all states with paramutual, long-standing histories of paramutual, many states with racing commissions. And yet the issue of the jockey's employment by the track was decided by the court under the common law. This court will decide today whether jockeys conclusively must be employed by the tracks where they ride. That is a position that no other state, no other court, anywhere else in this country that's looked at this issue has ever determined.
Do some of them say it's a fact question?
Some of the courts do address it as a fact question, Your Honor, but what petitioner asked this court to do is conclude as a matter of law that jockeys must be employed by the track.
Any of those states have mandatory comp laws?
Some of the tracks do. For instance, Your Honor.
He asked about states, not tracks.
Oh, I'm sorry. States. I misspoke. Yes, Your Honor. Some of the states do have mandatory comp laws, and several of the cases deal with that. For instance, the Haggard opinion out of Arizona. In Haggard, the Industrial Commission, which is the equivalent of the IAB here in Texas, required all tracks to maintain a comp policy for all jockeys. That went up to the Arizona Supreme Court, and looking at the facts in that case, the Arizona Supreme Court said, yes, it's true, the stewards, the judges control virtually everything the jockey does while he's on the track, but it violates every principle of reason and justice to hold them employees because they do not have a common goal. Petitioner has cited no good reason why this court should stake out a lone minority position on this issue.
Does the racetrack maintain a list of jockeys that are approved to race at that down, said, If I have a horse and I don't have a jockey and I go out there and I say, I want to race on Tuesday, can you get me a rider? Do they do that?
No, Your Honor. I believe the way the system works, as indicated in the record, is the jockeys remain in the jock room. They show up and they're all weighed. Okay? And then they are set aside in the jockey's room. Owners or trainers may go up to the jockey's room and say, I'd like to have a rider. And several of them will come out, and it's sort of a bargaining agreement that goes on right there. Several of the jockeys will say, well, hire me, hire me, hire me, and the owner will say, no, I want you, or I want you, or I don't want you. But the track does not get involved in that in any way.
Do they bargain over how much they're going to pay?
The $40 jock mount is paid automatically through the track by the owners and trainers, but the additional bonus may be negotiated at that time. That's correct, Your Honor.
At the end of the year, does Maynard Downs send out a W-2 or a 1099?
1099, non-employee miscellaneous form, Your Honor, is what the record indicates.
Is it common or uncommon for there to be a bonus or tip or extra amount paid?
I don't believe there's any evidence on that, Your Honor. I believe the testimony is, though, that in stakes races where there's an additional purse, understandably, these races are held not only just for the money that can be won by the horses, but also to achieve a certain standing in the quarter horse association. And so sometimes the races run simply for the standing and sometimes for the purse. Where there's a purse involved, the jockeys will often negotiate for the payment of that purse.
Do the jockeys ever have agents whose job is to find them good horses and good races?
I don't believe there's any evidence of that here in Texas, Your Honor, and to be honest, I would suspect probably not. This being a non-paramutual state, I don't think it has become quite the industry that it is in, say, Kentucky or California or New Jersey. But I really don't think there's any evidence about that.
Is there evidence as to how many owners choose their jockeys as opposed to how many let the Downs choose them?
No, I don't believe so. I believe Mr. Thompson indicated in cross-examination that he was there this day at the request of Mr. Charles Thompson, the owner of the horse he was riding at the time he was injured. That's why he arrived at Maynard Downs this day, and he sat around throughout the day trying to pick up additional rides during the day.
Charles Thompson and Tommy Thompson related?
I don't believe there is any relation, Your Honor. In sum, to say that Mr. Thompson is an employee of Maynard Downs really ignores the more basic requirement for an employment relationship, and that is that there be a unity or a commonality of purpose. That is not present today. For the very same reasons that a professional athlete cannot be employed by the referee of the game, even though the referee may control every element of what the athlete does while he's on the field. He may fine the athlete. He may suspend the athlete. He may eject the athlete. He has complete police powers. In fact, he may fine the athlete and actually, just as the track may in this case through the stewards, somehow impose some monetary penalty. Referees have the same ability to do that in a professional sporting arena.
The distinction was made that the referees don't pay the athlete.
And they don't choose which players play.
Well, exactly, Your Honor. They do not assign players to the teams. But by the same token, Maynard Downs does not go in and say, Mr. Thompson, you have to ride for Charles Thompson.
But
and Danny Cardozo, you ride
in this race, they did. In other words, the owner did not come with a jockey or did not request a jockey.
Charles Thompson, in this race, at the time of this injury, requested
I thought this was another race. In the very race that this man was injured in, he was riding, he was not selected by a trainer for Maynard Downs?
That's incorrect, Your Honor. Mr. Thompson was called, I believe the record indicates, during the week before the race and requested by Mr. Thompson to show up at Maynard Downs to ride his horses.
In this race or in another race?
In this race where he was injured. So in this case, he was selected by Mr. Thompson, the putative employer in this case. The reason the court has difficulty applying this test to other situations is because when you look at a competitive sporting arena, it makes little sense to say that the referee is the employer of the contestants. The petitioner asked this court to find as a matter of law in Texas that tracks employ the jockeys. And I think the question remains to be asked. Does this court also expect the public of this state to place bets at tracks where the person that's going to pay the bet employs the contestants? Clearly not. That's the reason the American Quarter Horse Association prohibits the owner of the track from having horses competing at the race. The horses cannot listen to instructions. Jockeys can. Jockeys are hired by the owners and trainers to accomplish a stated goal, to win the race.
Well, does the American Quarter Horse Association prohibit tracks from hiring that jockey?
No, Your Honor, and I do not believe there's any evidence about it, but I believe the rules don't speak directly to the employment of jockeys. To be honest, this issue really doesn't arise that much. It does speak specifically to prohibiting horses owned by the owner or the stewards from competing in the race because of the appearance of impropriety. Does it appear any less improper if the track then employs the very jockeys who are steering that horse to the finish line? I think not. I think there is still the appearance of impropriety. And that, for that very reason alone, there can be no employment relationship. As determined by the trial judge and the Court of Appeals, the evidence was sufficient to find that the petitioner was not an employee. There is not sufficient evidence in this case to conclusively establish an employment relationship. To say now on these facts that all jockeys at all tracks, everywhere in Texas, are employed by the track where they ride is inconsistent with current Texas law. It is inconsistent with every other state in the country, states with long histories of horse racing, unlike Texas. And it should not become the law of Texas today. For these reasons, respondent requests that this court affirm.
Thank you.
Who selected Mr. Thompson to ride in this race?
Not Mr. Thompson. This was Mr. Thompson had asked him to ride in a race prior to the eighth race of the day. The record clearly shows that this was a race that he was chosen out of the pool of jockey talent. Rather, in fact, we disagree, and the record will show that we're correct, that this was not the race that Mr. Thompson had requested that he ride in. An additional point that's been overlooked...
Let me make sure I understand.
Yes, sir.
The owner for whom he was riding in the eighth race, which is the race in which he was injured?
After the eighth race was when he was injured, but yes.
What do you mean after the eighth?
The race was over. The horses had crossed the finish line. Tommy Thompson had come in fourth or fifth in this race. The horses were cooling down, so any advice that these owners or trainers had given him about how to ride the horse had already occurred. But the race was over when this injury occurred.
How was he injured?
Pardon me?
What was the circumstance?
The horse backed him into the rail, or he was thrown off. The horse reared, and he was thrown off into the rail and broke his leg very severely.
Well, was he still on the horse?
He was thrown off the horse into the rail.
So he hadn't yet dismounted?
No, sir. It was after the race. He was cooling the horse down. The race was over, and they were making it around the turn, and something happened to the horse that caused him to spook.
Don't you normally ride a horse afterwards to cool it down?
Certainly.
Like a runner walks after jogging?
Sure, yeah, you don't just stop right at the end. Okay. There's no question about that, but as a technical matter, the race was over. The how you ride the horse to win the race part was already over.
But the owner called him earlier in the week and asked him to ride in an earlier race.
Correct.
And then that day also asked him to ride in this race.
No, sir. Not correct. This was a different owner, a different horse. He'd been called earlier.
Well, this was a different...
He'd ridden Mr. Thompson's horse earlier. And this was a different owner, a different trainer, a different race.
Who asked him to ride?
The owner or the trainer of the horse in question. I don't think we really know. I don't think it's in the record.
Oh, but it was the trainer of the horse, not an employee of Maynard Downs that asked him.
That asked him to ride that race. That's correct.
Well, not an employee of Maynard.
That's correct. He owned or trained the horse.
As I understand it, sometimes the owners, I can't understand the horse owner doing this, but some horse owners just say to Maynard Downs, pick a jockey for me.
Well, for example, in the record, it occasionally happens that the horse shows up at the starting line and the jockey, for whatever reason, can't make weight, had his license revoked in the race earlier. For whatever reason, the trainer has no horse. Maynard Downs, as the record shows, puts out a call. For the first jockey who shows up at that horse.
In this case, the trainer who chose him was a trainer for some unknown owner.
That's correct. That is correct. Respondent has made a point that each of the courts in all these other jurisdictions who've ever ruled on it would rule differently, but I'd like to ask the court to read these cases that he supplied you with, which I'm sure you will, but just...
First of all, do you agree with that?
No, sir.
Okay.
I disagree totally. In the Monday versus Churchill Downs case, for example, the facts were that Churchill Downs did not control the arrival or the departure of the jockeys, nor did they pass on the jockeys' qualifications. Quite different in our case, and the results would have been different in the Churchill Downs case.
But my question was, is there any case that holds that the jockey's an employee of the track?
No, sir. This is basically a case of first impression there and here.
In the world.
That's correct.
Is Churchill Downs a quarter horse trainer?
Thoroughbred, for sure, just from watching TV.
They don't require him to be there early?
Pardon me?
They don't require him
to be there? No, sir. Not as best I can tell from reading the record. Churchill Downs case, for example, the facts were that Churchill Downs did not control the arrival or the departure of the jockeys, nor did they pass on the jockeys' qualifications. Quite different in our case, and the results would have been different in the Churchill Downs case.
But my question was, is there any case... that holds the jockey's employee of the track?
No, sir. This is basically a case of first impression there and here
in the world.
sure, just from watching TV.
They don't require him to be there early?
Pardon me?
They don't require him to
No, sir. Not as best I can tell from reading the record.
Other counsel was saying that the reason they had to be there early was check them for weight, make sure that there's no tamper.
Well, the reason that the record reflects they have to be there an hour early in this case is because their employer, Maynard Downs, requires that they be there in order to work 1 hour early.
Why are they required to be there early?
I'm not sure that the record reflects what Maynard Downs' reasoning for that was. Perhaps it's the American Quarter Horse Association rule that may in fact say that in the record, but it was certainly Maynard Downs' choice in this case to require them to be there at that time, just as it was Maynard Downs' choice to operate under this particular set of operating rules.
Counsel, why is this not a fact issue that you lost in trial court? You know, the matter of control. You know, we've got testimony here from the jockey, testimony from the owner of the track. There's a two versions. Factual dispute. The trial court makes a determination based on the evidence which he heard, and you lost.
I don't think that it's necessarily a dispute as to the facts in this case. There's no dispute as
well. Well, Maynard Downs was denying control, and you were saying Maynard Downs was.
That's the ultimate issue. That's not a factual issue. That's the application of the facts to the law. Maynard Downs is saying, when you apply these facts to this law, we're not an employee.
Well, we're not an employee because we don't control your activity.
That's correct. You don't meet the test required by the law. And quite simply, petitioner is stating now and stated all along, these are the facts. They're not going to change. Respondent didn't change the facts. These are the facts. Based on these facts, there's only one conclusion, and that is that Maynard Downs had the complete right to control of this person's conduct from 1 hour before race day until he chose to leave the park. And also paid him at the end of his work day. The Bigger versus Irwin in the New Jersey case, there was no right to hire and fire, and no financial considerations passed between the course and the jockey. Different fact situation in our case, and the result may well have been in favor of Mr. Thompson being an employee of the track with our facts. In Dillon versus the Industrial Accident Committee, in Simmons versus Kansas City, which respondent has talked about, there weren't enough facts to determine how the court would actually have applied the question. There was no way to tell. In Pierce versus Bowen, a case based on the court turned on this one unusual instance where the trainers actually had the right to fire a jockey for not following their suggestions during the course of the running of the race. And of course, our facts are totally different. But because of the way the pay was structured and because of the way the stewards and judges and Maynard Downs handled their business, Maynard Downs was the only one that had the right to hire and fire.
Can any effectors leave this issue to the finder of facts?
No, sir. Not to my knowledge. Not from my reading of the cases that he's provided. In conclusion, respondent has tried to enlarge or add a different test, and that is the similarity of goals that he speaks of, the divergence of purpose rule that he asks you to apply, and quite simply, the court is not required to apply such a rule. Such a rule doesn't exist in the state of Texas. Whether the employee's goals are the same as the employer's goals is really not the issue, and quite clearly, those goals could be divergent in any number of cases. The welder who just wants to put in his time to make his paycheck certainly doesn't have the same goals as the oil company that's hired him to.
But don't you see a difference here? We have a professional applying his skills rather than, which is a little bit different than doing generic welding.
Actually, I see no difference. I think that the closest analogy is a defense lawyer practicing law representing Travelers Insurance Company. The horse he's riding is Travelers' case. He bills out and Travelers pays in, but it all goes into the general fund of Brown, Maroney, Oak, and Hardline, and it's ultimately paid to the defense lawyer.
But
Travelers Insurance Company may well choose what lawyer they want, but they never become his employer.
But there's some lawyers that bill $100 an hour and others bill $500 an hour, and depends on performance and skill and the same thing that a jockey would, I'm sure, would.
But nonetheless, the attorney is still the employer of, in this case, Brown, Maroney, Oaks, and Hardline, and at no time does he become the employer of Travelers, regardless of the amount of remuneration that Travelers sends indirectly to him.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
That concludes the arguments for the day. The foregoing causes are submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will now adjourn the court.
The audience will please rise.